Meeting, unless there's any objections, let's skip over item one for now and go to item two, the approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Approved. A motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
Trustee Cannon made the motion and Trustee McDermott made the second. Are there any questions or comments on this item? Okay, all those in favor, Trustee Cannon?
Yes.
Trustee McDermott?
Yes.
Trustee Cousin?
Yes.
Trustee Ribeiro? Yes. And I am a yes as well, so that item passes. Item three, administrative matters. A, ordinance regarding the disclosure and compliance with local approval procedures. Discussion on this item. Attorney Cohen.
Thank you. This is Carolyn Cohn. Just to bring the trustees up to date about this ordinance, as you may recall, the Board of Alders hired an attorney named Steve Mednick to sue the city regarding the annuity that had been purchased for Frank Ritchie, who's a retiree, to make up the difference between his pension and what he thought he was entitled to under a memorandum of understanding. In connection with that representation, Attorney Mednick drafted an ordinance which requires two things. It requires, one, if any city agency or board enters into an agreement, that has to be disclosed to the Board of Alders within 36 hours of the consummation of the agreement, and two, if the agreement requires the approval of another city agency or board, that agreement, that settlement or stipulation or memorandum of understanding, has to go to the second board or to the board that requires the approval. So we had, on behalf of SURF, I had written a letter about three concerns about that ordinance. One was, I believe that the trusts, both SURF and PNF, are trusts, they're independent, and the Board of Alders does not have the authority to tell the two trusts or the two pension boards that they have to come before it with any settlements. Two, I had was concerned about the way they had described what it is that the pension boards do. And three, Attorney Mednick had written something in the ordinance that said that the city's corporation council could settle cases involving the pension board. At our last meeting in November, this board authorized me to write a short letter, which I did, saying that this board agreed with the SURF board's letter. The upshot of all this was that on December 7th, the Board of Alders passed the ordinance. They took the attorney Mendick took the position that our boards, our city agencies and city departments, which I think is legally incorrect, they described more correctly our role with respect to administering the pensions, and they removed the provision that said the Corporation Council could settle cases having to do with decisions that these two boards make. So right at the moment, you know, we do not have any settlements. It's very possible in the future we could, particularly for an overpayment. We often enter into an agreement, a repayment agreement. And at that point in time, we're going to have to make the decision whether or not we are going to notify the Board of Alders or just take the position that they don't have the authority to require us to do that. So that's my report on that ordinance.
Attorney Cohen, any questions? Trustee Cannon.
Attorney Cohen, legally, where do we oppose this ordinance? Is there a higher court, so to speak? Where do we go with this?
I think what we would do is wait until the issue, as they say, and this same question was raised by the SURF board, wait until there becomes an issue where we have to take some action, like report it to the board. And then if we wanted to, I mean, this would cost money, we could go to court and say, look, we don't think they have the right to make us do this, or we could wait until we could just do what we wanted to and ignore them and wait until they did something. But at the moment, we would need to have some sort of claim or MOU or settlement agreement that we were involved in to make it, as they say, ripe for a court to decide. And I think it probably, the unions will probably, it will probably come up in, you know, procedures before the state labor board, I would imagine, so.
That is correct. The local 825 firefighters will be filing charges on our end of it. And I believe that, I can't speak for Mr. McDermott, but I've spoken with the leader of Elm City Police, and they will also be filing charges.
And the City Corporation Council also, for different reasons, probably more similar to the union's reasons, oppose this ordinance. So.
Yes, I believe we're all on board. I believe you're opposed to it, obviously, also.
Right.
So legally, we have a good team in place to challenge this ordinance or just not acknowledge it.
Right,
and
right.
Then we just keep volleying back and forth. The right. Sad thing is, and our president, Mayor Melliker, might be interested in this. This is going to be going on for years and years, and I don't know who pays the legal bills over at the Board of Alders, but this Mr. Mednick is just going to drive this thing, and there's going to be a big legal bills on both sides, and the taxpayers in the end are going to get hurt by this. And that's the sad part of this.
So hopefully we can just sort of sit on the sidelines for this fight, but we'll see.
Any other comments? Okay. Moving on to item B or 3B, income waiver cap application review.
Leanna, do you want to share that or?
Yeah, let me bring it up on the screen. At last month's meeting, Trustee Ribeiro and the rest of the trustees requested that an application be shown to be approved over the income for the income cap waiver. Let me just share screen. So this was the application that I created, and I had Carolyn look over. It was a part of the packet that I sent to you guys last night. It goes over basically kind of what we talked about in the meeting last month for the information that's required. They have to sign off to get medical release, you know, from the from either the police chief or the fire chief. And then here just explains the part in both contracts.
Any questions on this? And it's hard for me to see everyone on my screen right now, so if you have a question, you can just speak up.
Carolyn, do they need to vote on this or at all or no?
I don't think so. I mean, Trustee Ribeiro had asked to see it. But I do think, this is Carolyn Cohn, I do think, and I probably should just say this to you offline, but it's important to send the new policy and the application to the police chief and the fire chief, so they're, and maybe even Department of Human Resources, so they're all aware of the policy.
Okay.
Any questions? Trustee Ribeiro, you unmuted, you're good.
I was going to say we didn't need to vote. I think we voted for that. We just wanted to see the product. If there were any issues, then we could vote. So thank you for your work.
Pretty straightforward to me. Item 3C, update on payment of administrative expenses.
This is Carolyn Cohn again. So just the history of this was that Trustee Cannon had brought it to the way the administrative expenses for the board have been paid, as you may recall, is that when Hooker and Holcomb compute the employer contribution, the ADEC, they include a projection based on the past administrative expenses and an inflationary figure. They put it in the ADEC. The ADEC goes to the mayor's office. From the mayor's office, it's put in the sent to the Board of Alders to be put in the budget. And what Trustee Cannon had brought to our attention correctly was that the board is supposed to vote on the estimate of the administrative expenses. So in a very informal working group with Hooker and Holcomb and Trustee Gormany, Leanna and myself, I came up with a proposal which would say next month in January, we're going to look at a proposed budget to be put in next year's fiscal year's budget for the city. And it will be part of the ADEC, but this board will vote on how much of the, what the number should be for the administrative expenses. I believe Trustee Cannon felt that the administrative expenses, when they go to the mayor's office and to the Board of Alders, should be a separate line item. So I looked at Section 202, I looked at the city's charter, I spoke to Trustee Gormany, and I feel that it's probably, and I'd like to hear what Trustee Gormany feels, but I feel that it's probably not necessary for compliance to have it be a separate line item. And what I worry about it being a separate line item is twofold. One is all of a sudden the Board of Alders, this is brings us back to Attorney Mennick, has much more of a role in approving how the board pays its bills and who it hires and becomes much more involved in the pension board's business than it has in the past. I also worry that if there's a shortfall on the administrative expenses, then somebody's going to have to go back to the Board of Alders and get additional money. And that's never, ever been a problem in the past. And then I think, and I'll turn this over to Trustee Gormany, there may also be some other issues about every time a bill has to be paid, the sort of paperwork and, that needs to go with it. So I would hope that that would not be a separate line item. And maybe Trustee Gormany can take it from there.
Yeah, no, thank you, Attorney.
I'm sorry. Procedurally, should we remove this from the table first or no, Attorney Cohn?
I think that would be appropriate if we're discussing it. So
Yes, right. Good point.
Yeah. Thank you, Trustee Ribeiro. is there a motion to remove the item from the table?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Trustee Ribeiro made the motion. Trustee Cannon, second. How do folks vote? Trustee Ribeiro?
Yes.
Trustee Cannon?
Yes.
Trustee McDermott?
Yes.
Trustee Cousin?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. So the item's been moved or removed from the table. Thank you, Trustee Ribeiro. Mr. Gormany.
All right. Thank you, Mayor Ellicker. I agree in looking at Section 202 of the Code of Ordinance. I agree with what Carolyn Cohn said, Attorney Cohn said. I took a look at the ordinance and just how we budget the ADEC itself and just reviewed the ADEC payment, over the last 5 years yesterday. And it does include the administrative expenses in there. Section 202 does say that we would, that we should estimate the expenses as a line item in the budget. And I will share my screen for 1 second to show you what that would look like. So currently, when we budget the ADEC, and I'm using just round numbers of this year's ADEC, was a little bit over $39.5 million. But right now, the administrative expenses are included in this $39.5 million. I think what Section 202 says is that the way the ADEC would be is in one line item would be the actual ADEC payment, and another line item would be the administrative expenses. As you can see, there's really no net change to the ADEC itself, since the administrative expenses are already included in there. So I think what we would do from the city, from a procedural standpoint, is budget the ADEC as you see it, as it says under Section 202 of the ordinance, and the funding would go to the pension board. And the funding that would go to the pension board would be the $39.1 million plus the $350,000. After talking to our city corporation council and Attorney Cohen yesterday in separate conversations, I think that would be the best way to satisfy Section 202 of the ordinance. Because as Attorney Cohen said, the pension boards historically have been a separate entity other than the city, and we've just transferred the money over. Once the city would get involved in administering expenses and everything else with the pension board, some of the issues that Attorney Cohen raised in her discussion come into play. And then it becomes, well, are the administrative expenses really the PNF board or the city? And there's a bunch of approvals and procedures that now come into play, treating it as a city agency or city department from an expenditure standpoint. So again, my recommendation in talking to our city corporation council yesterday would be, in the budget, we would budget it like I have here under Section 202. So it's very clear in the budget that these are the estimated expenses for the PNF board, and this is the actual ADEC payment. And then when we transfer over the funding, we would transfer over all the funding to the PNF board, into the PNF fund, and we would continue to, and the PNF board would continue to have the oversight of the administrative expenses and everything else, as it currently does. But I think Section 202 just says we have to be a little bit more transparent on what the ADEC actually is and the estimated expenses for the pension board. So if anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
I have a quick question. I guess I still don't understand. I thought Attorney Cohen's recommendation is to have one line in the budget, and your recommendation is to have two, Mike?
I defer to Ms. Trustee Gormany. This makes sense to me as well.
But so Michael, the issue of, say that our administrative expenses later on in the year are going to end up being $500,000 instead of $350,000. Attorney Cohen's point about, do we have to go back to the Board of Alders to request more money?
No. Because currently it's exactly how we do it, hooker and hokum. So the ordinance just says an estimated of expenses, which is why we only do one line item currently, because we don't know what the estimated expenses are. And hooker and hokum includes that in the ADEC currently. So we would still treat it even as two separate lines, the same way that we treat it now. It's just estimated expenses. That's what the city, what our actuarial is estimating as the expenses for that year. If it goes over the estimated expenses, then there is no action by the city, basically, because we estimated $350,000 as expenditures.
Okay. Are there other questions on this item? Trustee Rivera?
I think expenditures are less than what happens to the money.
Well, again, that's why I think, and I'm sorry if I confused everyone, this is what Section 202 says. Currently, the way that we do it is, if it's less or more, it's just money in the fund currently. So it's really to the benefit of PNF if it's less, or if it's less of an estimate. I mean, it's a two-edged sword, right? If it's less of an estimate, it's a benefit to the fund, right? If it's more of an estimate, then it's something that the fund picks up, right? I think it would continue to be that same that same situation.
Trustee Rivera, any other questions, sir?
Thank you.
So this is Carolyn Cohn. So next month, Leanna will need to prepare based on information from the finance department what the estimate of expenses, and also with the assistance of Hucker and Holcomb, what the expenses have been for the past year with an inflationary factor. And then this board will vote on what the administrative expenses are that will be forwarded to the mayor's office and to the Board of Alders.
Correct. So Hooker and Holcomb is, our two-year valuation is coming up with Hooker and Holcomb. So they will provide the ADEC payment, which includes the estimated expenses for the next 2 years for the city. And again, they work with the city's accounting division in finance, because we prepare the annual report, the annual CAFR report, which includes the pension information as well. So we should have that hopefully next month, usually depending on the timing and how much information has to go into the valuation. We'll hopefully have it by the next meeting at the end of January from Hooker and Holcomb.
Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, we do not need to vote on this item, correct?
I don't think so.
Okay. So let's move on to item 3D, Ironside Limited Partner Consent. This item was also tabled, so is there a motion to remove the item from the table?
Oh.
Second. Trustee Canton seconded. Trustee Ribeiro made the motion. All in favor of removing the item from the table, Trustee McDermott?
Yes.
Trustee Ribeiro?
Yes.
Trustee Canton?
Yes.
Trustee Cousin?
Yes.
And I am a yes as well. Discussion on this item.
I'm sorry, it's Carolyn. Mr. Moran, can you explain this item, what Ironsides is requesting?
Sure. Actually, Leanne, I just sent you an email. I don't know if you want to share that with everybody. This is a common part of private equity investment. So there's a commitment that we made to Constitution Capital. The name of their fund is Ironsides. We have investments in both the third fund, I believe, and the fifth fund. And so they have what's called an investment period, which is usually the first commitment of anywhere from 8 to 10 years, sometimes extended to 12. And so this is simply asking for them to increase the ability to recycle money from 20% to 25% of the money that they would historically return to an investor. And that's to refund their key businesses that they're invested in better shape. So it's very common. Again, we are a limited partner. They're the general partner. We're a limited partner. We're actually a very small partner when it comes to the total group. So this will be voted on by a majority. And quite frankly, it's been in play for a while now. So I could actually get back in touch with Constitution. This might have actually been done without our consent based on the majority. So that's pretty much the essence of it. But again, I sent a more detailed email to Leanna a couple months back explaining that.
And I have, this is Carolyn Cohn, I prepared this does require a vote, and I have prepared the form for Trustee Elliker to sign. So I can send that to Leanna to forward to Trustee Elliker if the vote is to approve this.
I'm sorry, Mr. Mann. I don't fully recall this item. So if it was already...
No, it hasn't been discussed at all. This is the first time.
So if it was already done with a majority vote, it's still necessary for us to.
No, it would not be necessary, right, Mr. Moran?
Yeah, we've done this in the past with many of our investments when it comes to our position within the total fund. So I'd be very surprised if this hasn't been done without our consent, but I will follow up with them today and get a formal answer. But from my conversations with them, this was most likely done.
So the best thing probably would be just to approve it, and then if we need to formally sign something, we will.
I could probably get an answer prior to the meeting being over. I'll text right now.
All right.
Either way, seems like it's six, one half a dozen together. Any questions on this from the trustees? Okay. So I entertain a motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
Thank you, Trustee McDermott. Is there a second?
Second.
Trustee Ribeiro, second. All those in favor, Trustee McDermott?
Yes.
Trustee Ribeiro? Trustee Cousin?
Yes.
Trustee Cannon?
Yes.
And I am a yes as well. The item passes. Item four, age annuity retirement information only. I acknowledge that item. Item five, death after retirement, information only as well. Donald Sarah and Fred Gear. And item six, survivor death after retirement, information only. Cora Carboni and Rose Russo. I'd like to take a moment to acknowledge the passing of those individuals. Thank you. Item six, payment of the bills. Is there a motion on this item?
Motion.
Trustee Cannon made the motion.
Second.
Trustee McDermott seconded. Discussion on the payment of the bills. All those in favor, Trustee Cannon?
Yes.
Trustee McDermott?
Yes.
Trustee Cousin?
Yes.
Trustee Ribeiro? And I'm a yes as well. Is there any old business? Any new business?
Yes, there is new business. We're going to have a quick presentation. Dave, do you have a quick synopsis before they start?
Sure. So we have a securities litigation firm, and we've had this conversation a number of times, but we have a number of different firms trying to do this for both funds, SURF and Police and Fire. And we have a firm, I think, Nancy, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Good morning.
Good morning. So that's Nancy Kless is with a firm called, excuse my pronunciation, but Bleichmar and Fonte.
Bleichmar, Fonte and Ault, that's correct.
Okay. And so Nancy's worked with both boards in the past. And what we're trying to do here is just do a consolidation of this process because we've had multiple people doing it. We get multiple different feeds from firms, and we'd like to try to consolidate this because the ability to see the class actions is not the most difficult thing. The ability to actually see them and then file them correctly is something that's of more importance. So I want to listen to and have Nancy talk to all of us today about what they do and how they do it and bring it to both Police and Fire and the SURF boards and try to make a recommendation to them to say, hey, if we're going to do this, let's do it right with a firm that's going to do it all encompassing and a better job of what they're doing. So with that, I hand it over to you, Nancy, and you can explain to us what you've done in the past and what you're looking to do for us going forward.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dave. Good morning, trustees of the New Haven Police and Fire Board. Happy holidays to all of you, and thank you very much for having us. My name is Nancy Kalesa, and I'm a partner at the law firm of Bleichmar, Fonte and Ault. I know many of you in connection with having represented the New Haven SURF Board at my prior law firm. And for those of you who don't know me, I've been practicing securities litigation and representing institutional investors for about 20 years. I'm one of the few securities litigation attorneys who's lucky enough to call the state of Connecticut home. And with me today is my partner, Aaron Woods, who's head of our claims filing team. And Aaron has vast experience in advising institutional investors on recovering investment losses, particularly through filing of settlement claims. And she's going to speak about that in just a little bit. We'll make this very brief so you can resume your holiday endeavors. But basically, as Dave said, we're here to talk about our proposal for portfolio monitoring, claims filing services, and litigation services in the event that that's necessary. But in sum, we think that we can offer a single streamlined solution for your board. Basically, what we do is monitor our clients' funds for instances in which they're included in a securities class action and they may be eligible to make a claim. Making a claim is critical because it's the only way your fund can recover any settlement proceeds. In most instances, the clients are not actively involved in a litigation. And in those instances, we provide reporting to the clients, including notification of settlements. We're also able to file claims forms on your behalf. And basically, as Dave mentioned, your fund has had numerous providers doing various pieces of this process. We would propose to just do all of it in a streamlined solution. So to provide a quick intro of our firm, we are based in New York City. We have offices in Toronto, Oakland, and Westchester, New York. We've litigated dozens of securities cases and have contributed to the recovery of over $11 billion for investors, including more than $600 million since our firm was formed. To talk a little bit about claims filing, our team has over a decade of experience providing claims filing services, and we currently provide claims filing services for clients who collectively have over $1 trillion in assets under management. And through those claims filing services, we repeatedly increase our clients' settlement recoveries compared to recoveries that are just achieved by custodial banks or third-party vendors. And as I said, we focus on domestic and international securities litigation. And our clients include a very wide range of funds, including some of the largest and most sophisticated institutional investors in the world. We represent a number of police and fire funds. We represent the Chicago Police, the Miami Police and Fire, the Teachers Retirement System of Texas, and the Police and Fire Retirement System of Detroit, just to name a few. If you could just move to slide 2, I don't know if that's possible, or if you're following along in your packets. Basically, what we do is we put our clients first. We provide services to our clients that are just tailored to meet their needs. Some things that I think our firm does differently from other firms is we are very highly selective about the cases that we recommend our clients get involved in. And by that, I mean taking an active role in. We don't have an inventory model like other firms where we recommend every single case. Basically, we represent only cases that represent a credible opportunity for recovery for our clients. We offer claims filing services, as I mentioned, and it's global coverage. We file in all cases. In addition to securities matters, we handle antitrust matters, which a lot of other firms don't do. So in sum, it's a one-stop solution. One other quick thing is, in terms of our litigation philosophy, when we do get involved in a case, we take cases deep into litigation to the eve of trial. We don't settle cases early. We, in many instances, have taken cases after class certification, taken like 50 depositions in one of the cases in which we were lead counsel. So we have an aggressive litigation strategy. Finally, our firm is committed to the ethical practice of law. We do not make political donations and we seek to be retained only on our merits. With that, I'm going to turn this over to Aaron Woods. As I mentioned, Aaron has vast experience in advising institutional investors on recovering investment losses. through claims filing, and she's going to speak about those services.
Good morning. As Nancy mentioned, I'm Erin Woods. I'm a partner of Blackmar Fontaine Auld, and I head our claims filing team. I've also been in the industry for well over a decade, including in securities litigation firms, and I've also worked at a settlement administrator, which I'll speak about in a moment, is very helpful for filing our clients' claim forms. If you'd please go to slide 4, I'll just give you a brief overview of our process for filing claims. There are a number of steps that we take when we're newly retained to file claim forms for our clients, including our onboarding and auditing process. When we're first retained, we gain access to our clients' trading portfolios through their custodian, and so we have direct access to all of the securities they held. And when we onboard a new client, our practice is to do an audit of recent claim forms filed by the previous service provider. We often audit claims in the last 3 to 6 months, but we're certainly happy to expand that if you think there's prior claims you'd like us to review to see if the fund did have exposure and to make sure all the claims are filed and they are maximized. The audit process is really important, we found, as in a couple of different audits, we found a SEC disgorgement action that was missed for a client. They had an $800,000 recognized loss. So we contacted the settlement administrator and said, we're newly retained. Our client had this loss. It looks like this claim form wasn't filed for them. We'd like to file it now. And we were able to recover an estimated recovery of over $500,000 based on the distribution of that settlement, which was great. Similarly, with another claim, we saw that our client had received a deficiency notice and our client's prior service provider did not respond to the deficiency notice. So I'm sorry, I'm jumping ahead. Let me take a step back. So for our different steps for claim filing services, when we onboard, we perform an audit. Once we have access to all the claim to the trading data, we track every single settlement. We identify what settlements each of our clients is eligible to recover from. And then we assess the trading data and file a claim on the client's behalf. There are sometimes a couple of different ways you can file a claim and how you assemble the data. So we ensure that we look at the various options and make sure we maximize our client's claims. Once we file the claim, it's really important to keep track of the process of the settlement administrator and where they stand. Sometimes the settlement administrator will have a couple of questions, whether maybe they need another field of data that they hadn't requested at the outset. So they need, or they need a little bit more clarifying information about where a trade occurred, or they need supporting documentation, statements from the custodian, just affirming that the client did submit this trade. So we go through that process. And when I said it's helpful that I worked as an administrator prior to this position, in this process with the administrators, they often will send emails from, just a generic account requesting information or identifying an issue with a claim. It's extremely helpful to have a personal contact at these administrators where you can call them and say, we received this email, we don't agree with the assessment. We're happy to provide more information to show you that this is the eligible amount of the claim. All of these trades should be submitted. And we can, at not only the administrator I previously worked at, a couple of my team members also worked at administrators. And so we can most often get somebody on the phone who says, okay, I see what you're saying. This claim is fine. It's approved. We're going to pay it. And that's a really important process because, as I mentioned earlier, when we started filing a claim for a previous client, we were doing an audit and it looked like their prior service provider did not respond to a deficiency notice. So essentially the administrator had said, you filed this claim, we need more information. The service provider didn't respond, so they weren't going to get paid on a number of different claims. So we reviewed those and we saw that there were a couple of intra-fund transfers that weren't accounted for, and we increased that client's payment by over $2 million. That, of course, was for the Petrobras case, which is a very large, nearly $3 billion settlement. So that might not be the case in all settlement claim forms that we're able to fix. But even at times, we'll receive a check for a client, and we notice that the check is a smaller amount than it should be. We can also get the administrator on the phone. And recently, we increased a client's check by 3 times because they they acknowledged that they had made an error in their calculations. So this is all just a very important part of the claims filing process. Through our experience, we found it's not just a simple process where you just file the claim form and it's done. There's usually a bit of back and forth. And sometimes we do have to say, challenge the administrator's determinations to make sure our clients get the money that we feel that they're entitled to. So that's part of our track and resolve process. And then our reporting, I'll speak about in a moment. So turning to slide five, as Nancy mentioned, we file claims forms for all actions. We file for the securities class action, disgorgement actions, and the financial instrument antitrust actions, which tend to be much more complex. Most custodians don't file those actions for their clients because there is not just a simple CUSIP or ISIN, you know, the typical identifier for these financial instrument cases. So even for certain clients whose custodians do file their claim forms, we handle their antitrust claim forms to make sure that they're recovering all money that they're eligible for. We also file claim forms in all relevant jurisdictions. Canada has a similar process to the US with their claims class actions. Same thing with Australia and the Netherlands. There are some actions where instead of actively joining a case, you're simply able to register and file what is essentially a claim form. So we track all actions around the globe to make sure our clients are recovering their money.
I'm sorry, Ms. Woods, could I interrupt and just ask a general question?
Yes.
For Dave Moran, I'm not clear what problem we're addressing here. So who currently does this work for this us?
Do you want to answer this, Dave, or do you want me to? It's
Carol. Either Carol or Dave is fine.
You can start, and then I have a comment as to why I think it should be consolidated.
Well, as far as we've been looking into this recently, and I believe Morgan Stanley, and Davey, correct me, as a co-custodian of our securities used to file these claims for us, and Northern Trust even before that filed these claims. But I think what we've found is that at the moment, we have no one filing these claims for us. And so this is a remedial action that Dave has helpfully brought to our, you know, attention.
So the other firms are just identifying the claims, because there's been other firms that have come on to the call this meeting before.
Right. They are identifying the cases.
How is it helpful to identify them if there's no action?
Exactly. No, that's the point. And I think the point is that if you're going to go through this process, I mean, Morgan Stanley was doing it, but as we discussed prior to this conference call, they were not doing it in a way that this firm does it. And to just simply be notified and then have internal counsel or someone else file it, I think it's a waste of time. So I think that if it's going to be on a contingency type basis, that we should have a firm that's doing both. That's my recommendation. And more importantly, if they're willing to go back to, let's say, January 1 of this year and look at everything we've owned at their cost, and then if they file, you get, you know, a percentage. I think that it's finally something where it's doing its job, versus I think we have a lot of people watching it and not a lot getting done. So I think we should consolidate, have someone take a look, and then actually do the filing also all in one shot.
How is this typically done in other pension funds? Is it, are there two separate groups, or is it a consolidated group?
So, yes, you can answer that, I think, better than I can. But I know multiple funds that don't even do this on the smaller end. So I think on the bigger funds, that's very much more common. But I think Nancy or Aaron can answer that better as far as, you know, who does it and whether it's obviously worth their while.
Right. And I think when Leanna spoke, this is Carolyn, when Leanna spoke to Northern Trust, she was led to believe that it was often the custodial bank that filed these claims, that was the
common. Which is Morgan Stanley?
No. So at this point in time, it's State Street Bank is our custodian, but it's not in their agreement to file these claims, and they would be anxious to do that, right?
Well, First State Trust, it's First State Trust, and they're a co-custodian, and we use them because of accounting purposes. The actual custodian at the time was Morgan Stanley, and now the actual custodian right now is Raymond James. So there's been people, again, recognizing this. And Raymond James has the ability to do this also. We do have the ability to look at our, we have a portal. We can look at everything we own and find out exactly where these class actions are. The question is, who's going to take it to the next level and actually file these? So I just think that if there's anyone that's going to do it, I think, and we went through the cost with Northern Trusts. I mean, we saved millions and millions of dollars by removing that money from Northern Trust. So they weren't doing anything for free. So I just strongly believe that if we had one firm that's doing both the monitoring and the filing, again, at no cost to Raymond James or to the funds to find these things at the file, I just think it's something that that the board should consider. It's not obviously my decision, but something that they should consider. Unless so Carolyn, you have a different opinion.
There's no cost for the claims filing service?
It's just a percentage of whatever the settlement earnings are.
This is Nancy Kalesa. I just wanted to say that having the custodial bank file the claims is, for one, terribly inefficient, and oftentimes they actually miss claims. We've seen that in the audits that we've done. Some do a very good job of it. You just don't know. But the other thing is that at the custodial banks, these forms are not being filed by attorneys. Aaron and many of the others on our claims filing team are attorneys who have experience in not only recovering or making claims where there is a settlement, but also in drafting settlement plans and litigation. It's just another level, a much higher level of service. And certainly because this is our business, because we monitor every securities litigation there is, we don't miss things. Things don't fall through the cracks. It's a very comprehensive process. So I think that may be the difference.
So Nancy, can you explain what percentage that you take of the claims that you file?
Sure. So two things. One thing I want to just make the distinction. For the monitoring service, just letting you know what you're involved in, if we don't file a claim, there is absolutely no fee for that. That's free. If we file a claim for you, it's again contingent. If there's no recovery, you pay nothing. Other than that, it's a 5% charge. That's 5% of the amount recovered. But there's a cap. It's subject to a $9,500 cap per claim. And we don't charge you anything until after the funds are received. And I would say that, if you were to hire some third party service, we've seen charges upwards of 10%. And Wait, some don't have a cap.
Many actually charge 16 to 18% is what many of the third party filers charge.
So I just want to raise a procedural question. We have not done RFPs for the class action council notification because there's no charge with this. It has been the fund's history wherever we pay something, and I realize this is contingency, to do an RFP for it. Now, this may be some sort of special circumstance where we decide that we're not going to do an RFP, but in our evaluation of this process, that is something that needs to be taken into consideration as well.
Thanks, Attorney Cohn. If I'll write, can I open it up to questions from the trustees? I'm not sure, unless the trustees feel it's important to go through the rest of the presentation. Happy to do that if the trustees feel that's important. But are there other questions from the trustees on this? Pat Cannon looks like he unmuted. Any questions? Yeah,
I'm sorry, I'm in my office. There's a lot of background noise going on.
Go ahead, Trustee Cannon.
Mayor, my experience on this board, which is over 5 years, we've utilized a company like this. Once again, there's no cost to us, and they're out there looking at whatever class action lawsuit is out there. A lot of these investment companies that we don't have the ability to watch over, we have a firm like this to do it. I believe, and I do remember Ms. Kalesi, with the previous firm that she was with, not only did she do some work for SURF, but I believe she may have done some work for P&F in the past. I don't think we really need to go into this too far, but with the presentation, so I agree with you on that. But I can vouch that I think it's a good service, and the experience with Ms. Kalesi has been good in the past. So if need be, I can make a motion to continue to start with this company.
Just a procedural question. Is there an action that the pension board needs to take here? Attorney Cohn, do you have any?
Yes. So there are two possible actions. One is to engage this firm, and there'll be a retainer letter that will provide everything. And then the other action, from what I understand Mr. Moran saying, is we have two other firms for PNF, I think three for SURF, which we, the question is, does the do we want to end our relationships with them because we have retainer agreements with them as well?
Is that a question for me? Yes, I believe that we both front funds have talked about this to a great extent, and I think that if we can do the situation where we could use this firm for both police and fire and SURF, it'll consolidate a lot of these conversations. It'll consolidate a lot of these reports that we get, and it'll be a more concise and accurate way of figuring out if we have recovery. And so in my opinion, that would be the case that you'd probably like to narrow it down instead of doing this consistently and overlapping with information.
Thanks, Dave. Trustee Cannon, it looked like you were interested in making a motion.
I'd like to make a motion to enter into an agreement with this law firm to look into class action lawsuits on our behalf.
I'll second that.
Trustee McDermott has seconded. Is there any other discussion on this item?
I have a question. Trustee Cannon, did your motion also include terminating the relationships with our other two class action counsel?
Question to you, do we have to?
We don't have to at all. You do not have to. You will continue to get reports from them, but you do not have to.
I don't see the harm in just keeping everybody looking out for our best interests.
Just a point of discussion, what is their motivation for doing that if they're not getting paid? They're currently not getting paid either.
Right, but if they identify a case and then they bring the case and they're you know, those cases are quite lucrative.
But they have not been bringing cases.
Not on behalf of, not any that we're aware of right now, but.
Dave, does this complicate things if there's multiple firms that are working on this?
It doesn't complicate my job in the least. I think the question for Nancy and Aaron is there a situation where you're going to find a firm that finds something that you don't find? That's the real thing. I mean, there's stuff that slips through the cracks that they're going to find and bring to us and say, you know, these guys didn't find it, we're going to file on your behalf, or is it pretty straightforward that if you're all getting the same feeds, you're going to see the same actions and the same suits and recommend whether we go or not. So that's a question to the attorneys.
Sure. Well, this is Nancy Kalesa. In terms of claims filing, these are cases that have already been filed and you would file a claim. So everyone should identify those cases. I think we do a very good job of making sure that nothing is missed. In terms of identifying new cases, like a case that we may initiate, another firm may initiate a case that we don't think is meritorious, but in terms of claims filing, I think the universe is pretty concrete. And it is, you could have other firms that are monitoring for you. If we were doing the claims, we would do all of the claims. Because you don't want to have several firms filing claims for you. You can only file one claim in each case. But it, you know, it wouldn't harm you to have other firms doing monitoring if that's what you wanted to do.
Okay. This is Trustee Cousin. My only concern is I feel like, you know, just like Trustee Cannon stated, I've been on the board for like 4 or 5 years. And I feel like it's like my fifth presentation I went through regarding security monitoring. Right now, if we take you on, this will be our third company that will represent us. My question is, how many more companies we need to feel like we need to take on to do the same thing? Just for the fact that we will have unlikely where they're going to be looking at the same type of thing, what have you. Who's going to get the credit? Is there going to be a procedure for that? I'm just really confused by how many firms you're going to look at to do this very same issue.
This is Leanna. I think the big thing here is that they're going to do the filing of the claims for us, which the other two firms do not do. It's supposed to be handled by the custodial bank, but upon research, we don't think that it's, you know, properly being done, which means the fund is missing out on potential, you know, money. So bringing on this firm would mean that they would do the monitoring and they would do the filing. So we don't have to worry about the claims not getting filed.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Thank you, Leanna.
So why would we need the other two? This is Trustee Cousin again.
Trustee can't.
Trustee Ken would like to amend the motion to terminate, add the termination of the other companies in favor of this company.
Is there a second?
This is Trustee Cousin. I second that motion.
Any discussion on the item? Seeing none, Trustee Cannon, how do you vote?
Yes.
Trustee Cousin?
Yes.
Trustee Rivera?
Yes.
Trustee McDermott?
Yes.
And I'm a yes as well. The item passes. Is there any additional new business? Thank you to Ms. Kalesa and Ms. Woods.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We look forward to working with you and seeing you in person soon and wish you all happy new year and health and fortitude. Thank you.
Thanks.
Be in touch.
Thank you.
Any additional new business? Okay, going on to item one, the investment report. Dave?
Hi, good morning, everyone. So we have a presentation this morning from a firm called Chart National. Chart's a legacy private equity firm that we've done business with in the past. They have a small remaining amount of money with us. I believe it's on the report, somewhere around $900,000. They have a unique approach to this, a very niche type of business. To put it frankly, we gave them $6 million a number of years back. I think it was back about 8 years. I'm sure Chris could update that on us, and we've pretty much doubled our money. So with that, I think they're both online. With that, I want to introduce from Chart, Chris Brady and his partner, Khalid El-Mosafi. And you guys can start your presentation with the help of Leanna and your slideshow.
Thanks, Dave. And I'm sorry I have to hop off, but Trustee Cannon is going to take over the meeting.
Yeah.
Take
Happy
care.
New Year, Happy New Year. Happy New Year, Mayor.
Happy New Year, Mayor.
Okay, folks, it's all you. Chris, can you hear me? You got to take, yeah, then I'm on mute. Oh.
Yep, I'm on. Cal's on.
Let me text Chris. He's on mute. Or can you call him, Cal?
Yep.
I got it.
Oh, he's on.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Should we go?
Yes.
Thank you very much for your time. I know it's a busy time of the year, and we'll make this brief. Some of you are familiar with our fund as you invested in our last fund, excuse me, $7 million, and we've returned $11 million and have two small companies remaining. So we appreciate your support. Next page. Invest in defense, intelligence, and security companies. You will hear us talk about the sector that's defense, intelligence, and security. We only invest in companies with long-term contracts that provide mission-critical products and services to our government. And it was very interesting to hear Mr. Gormany talk about budgeting, because that is what we study. As a private equity firm, we have three portfolio companies today. We've invested $65, almost $70 million in these three companies. Our fund, we're going to finish fundraising in February. We have 85% of our investors have repeated. So we hope we can get you folks to come back in. The Joe Wright is our chairman, and he and I have worked together investing over $200 million in the sector and have returned three times our money. Next page, please. This is a huge universe of companies supporting defense, security, and intelligence. 300,000 companies in our target range. It's a $1 trillion market. There are only four other private equity funds doing what we do. It takes a lot of work to understand budgets, legislative, executive, intelligence, and it's a lot of work, but we love to do it. It's a whole subsector of the economy, healthcare, airlines, automotive. The largest IT in the world. The government has invented the internet, GPS, now rapid DNA, all through the Navy, Army, Homeland Security. It's a very vibrant sector as well. Next page, please.
I can do this one, Chris.
Go ahead.
Thanks. This is Khaled. I'm Chris's partner at Chart National. Thanks for your time. And at Chart National, we have a strict investment process, and through it, we look for certain company attributes for our target portfolio companies. Chris mentioned a few, but the ones we really focus on are definitely long-term funded contracts from the U.S. government. These are typically 3 to 5 year contracts. They give us a lot of transparency into the revenues and earnings of the companies we're investing in. And besides for the preferred structure we put in to protect our LP's capital, this is a good downside protection, having that kind of outlook on our revenues for 5 years. The other attribute that we definitely look for is the companies provide a service or a product that's mission critical or essential for the US government. So in any down budget years, this is the last part of the budget that gets cut, these mission critical and essential services. So that's another good protection on the downside. We definitely like profitable companies. We only invest in profitable companies, ones that don't require more capital to stay alive, typically have no debt. And we really look for strong management teams because we mandate the management teams of our companies to reinvest their money back with us into our business plan. So they'll typically own 20 to 30% of the company with us going forward. So we're aligned day one. And as far as us as a team, I mean, the attributes we bring to the table is the ability to source deals directly and not through bankers necessarily. And that gives us an opportunity to buy at the right price going in, not an auction deal with other buyers.
And we won't do weaponry or munitions. Officer McDermott, you've probably used our equipment quite a bit. The EOTech holographic sight, twisted pair software on police radios, fire radios. One of our companies invented the CAT tourniquet, which is probably used by your emergency medical services. So you folks should be very familiar with what we do. Next page, please. So we're not going to get into great detail out of respect for your time. And we love talking about our companies, and we're available at any time. Sequoia Solutions, it works on the cloud in the government. President Obama insisted that the federal government go to cloud. Sassoon Education, HHS will be on the cloud. For now, it's just the intelligence community where they're trying to figure it out. Our company provides software and engineers to the cloud. There are the Department of Defense and the CIA have announced new clouds for $33 billion coming in the next 2 years. Next page, please. And this company is highly profitable. When we finished our transaction, we had $360,000 in working capital. 1 year later, we found ourselves with $3.5 million in cash. Our software engineers are highly cleared and they're very talented, so they command a premium price for the government. This company has made three distributions to us already in its short history. When you, if and when you invest in our fund, you will get your share of the
myself.
As the bottom left of this page, you'll see it on all our companies. We have long-term contracts. This is a very well-funded company. Next page, please. Next page, please.
Chris, I can do SNA. Our second company is in the healthcare sector.
Page 8, please. Thank you.
In the healthcare sector, we basically provide the largest number of forensic scientists to the medical examiner of the Department of Defense. So basically the services side of the company, we use our full-time scientists to locate, transport, and identify the remains of the missing in action from past conflicts, U.S. conflicts. There's about 86,000 MIAs, and we're able to, under this contract, find an average about 300 a year. So this is a long-term essential service contract that's not going away anytime soon. We also own a software that basically enhances the way that law enforcement agencies in the U.S. access and use DNA databases at forensic labs across the country. It's disruptive and it's adding good margins to our business. Next page, please, on the financials.
Hey, Cal, if I could interrupt. Officer McDermott, again, we are working with the state of Kentucky, the city of Palm Beach, and if New Haven would like to have us come in and show you how to use rapid DNA, which basically is 1 hour, and share that information throughout your city, we would be honored to do so. Good, Cal.
Thanks. Yeah. On this page, as you see, we as a fund acquired 75% of the business, and we mandated management to remain shareholders with us and grow the company with us for a second sale. So they own 25%. And we made this company has already made a distribution, just like Sequoia. We owned it since December of last year. They've made a distribution this year. And through our long-term contracts, again, you see on the bottom left, we have very good transparency into this year, 2021 and 2022, where our sales and earnings will come from, funded long-term contracts. I think on the next page, you get to see a picture of the founder, Amanda Sozer. She's a founder of the company and a shareholder and chief scientist with us right now going forward. And she's considered a leader in her field in the U.S. and one of the top DNA experts in the world. So we're very proud to be partners with Amanda in this business. I think that's it on SNA. Six, Jen is next on the next slide.
Next page, please. Very briefly, this is a cyber company. We've had great success with cyber in the past. You all have been reading about the Russian hack of U.S. government, the Russian hack of major corporations. SixGen is hired by corporations and the government to come in and penetration test. All of our engineers are from the intelligence community. We are Russian, Iranian, Korean, Chinese hacking experts. For instance, the Department of Homeland Security just hired us to hack one of the two companies making an approved coronavirus vaccine. So we went in, I can't tell you which one. We went into the company, got into their IT system with their permission, and within 3 weeks had hacked the whole thing. Showed them where their vulnerabilities were, and they tightened it up because the Chinese are desperate to find out how and where this vaccine is going. The Secretary of Defense hired us to hack the new Joint Strike Fighter, the F-35. Took us 4 weeks, but we got in, and we're helping companies and government tighten up our systems. Next page, please. Very profitable company as well. I hope what you're taking away from this is that this is not a blind private equity pool. We have three companies. They're all doing extremely well. And at the bottom left, I'm going to point out again, long-term contracts. Their revenues are, and again, I was watching you folks talk about budgets. That's exactly what we do. And we know that these contracts and all three companies are funded through 2022 and beyond. Next page, please. I think we could go to page 15, please. One more, thanks.
Oh, this is a snapshot of our investment summary report. You may be familiar with this format from Fund 2 that you're invested in with us. So this is what it looks like as received by the LPs. This one is dated June 30th, so actually it precedes the acquisition of our third portfolio company, SixGen. So when you add that in, that adds another $20 million under the capital invested. And it also precedes two dividend distributions made by the fund to its LPs. We sent out about 1.8 million total, 1.88 total this year to our LPs. So that adds that number to the realized value column.
Next page.
I think you guys are...
This is our track record in our defense and intelligence companies. In the last fund that you're invested in, we had some energy companies, did well, but they weren't returning five and four times our money. So we're just going to do defense and intelligence here. We've had a 3X. The important part of this slide is, if we can grow these young companies to $50 million in revenue, which we have done time and again, very large defense companies called integrators are there to buy them. Henry Schein, I know fire and police buy from them. They're the largest equipment suppliers to fire and police. They bought North American Rescue for five times our money. L3 Technologies, very large defense company. Textron bought ATAC from us. They're up your way. So once you get into $50 million in revenue, providing essential products or services, these guys stand ready to buy them. And it's worked really well for us. And it's worked very well for New Haven Fire and Police. So next page, and I think we'll finish with this, is the team. Joe Wright ran the Office of Management and Budget for President Reagan. He is a budget genius, and he's taught us all how to do it. Cal and I have worked together for 20 years. Lee Priest, who lives down in Virginia, has 300 carrier landings and is 20 years in the business. And Joe Boyle has been with us for 20 years as well. So a very tight-knit team. We would be honored to serve the pension fund one more time. David?
Sure. So I have a couple of questions, and then the trustees can obviously chime in. So, you know, we see a lot of deals. I mean, I can't tell you how many phone calls I get and emails about the next greatest fund I've ever, you know, invested in. So there's a million different private equity firms out there. We own a ton of them, whether it's tech investments or real estate investments or manufacturing. One thing about Chart that's interesting is that it's very niche business. And so I know your backgrounds, but how do you have access to some of these are not large businesses. So how do you get access to these small companies that are under the radar? Is it just because of your team or what? Because like I said, we don't see this all the time. And that's what really intrigues me, because when you're trying to build a $400 million portfolio, you don't want everything going in the same direction all the time. So can you just answer me that question as far as, you know, how's your team get access to these very sensitive data type companies?
There are only four other funds doing what we do, David. Now, some of the other funds will come in and buy a defense company and get their head handed to them. There are only four that do defense and intelligence only. There are five of us. And the other four are good, but they're much bigger. We choose to be down in this smaller area. You get better returns. So in terms of diversifying the pension fund's portfolio, this is the largest segment of America, is the sector, and you should be part of it. We've done some remarkable transactions, giving special operators comms on the move in the mountains of Afghanistan, radio software that just absolutely enhances the communications in theater. And people know that it's us. It's got the chart name on it. And our tourniquet, since the Rangers have started using our tourniquet, they've gone from 35% preventable deaths to zero. It's just, we hold our firepower until we know it's the right product or service, and we jump on it. And we're known for that. Over 3/4 of our deals come to us. Now, having said that, we're down in Washington, Maryland, Virginia. It's been very difficult this year, but we still are down there looking around. We have no shortage of interesting transactions because there's no one else doing it.
If you, it's a small portfolio, and you know, these are long-term commitments. What is the J curve on this thing? How quickly would we be looking at getting the majority of our money back? Is it, we're looking at 12 years? Are we looking at a quicker time frame when it comes to selling these companies?
Tough question and a relevant one. We've juggled management because it did take a long time last time. No, we're absolutely determined to have better asset velocity. We do not want to hold a company for more than 3 years. Sequoia Solutions, the cloud company, the CIA cloud company, we've already been approached by SAP, Microsoft as to whether we're willing to sell it. We're not at this stage because we're not at our 3x yet. I think we could sell part of the company this year, which means we'll only be in it for 2 years, get a 2X on that and keep the software. We are determined to turn these assets in 3 years.
Yeah, I would add to that also.
3X, David. Go ahead. If you get a 3X, you get your money back.
In our fund, we buy a majority position in our portfolio companies. And that gives us control on our business plan. And on day one, we align ourselves. These are very simple cap structure companies. They're not complicated with other private equity firms, institutions, or debt. So we are the private equity, and management is our co-shareholder. And from day one, we're aligned on a 3 to 4 year turnaround period, growth period and exit period with a 3X target.
Excuse me, this is Trustee Cannon. Dave, give us your recommendation. Is this something that we should be looking at today?
This is what I would do. If you don't have any more questions for these two gentlemen, I would like Leanna to say thank you for your presentation. We appreciate it. And now we're going to hang up on you and talk about you. and we'll get back to you shortly.
Happy New Year, and thank you for your time. And thank you for your service. Really appreciate what you do.
Appreciate it. Thanks for your prior investments.
Thank you.
I'd like to acknowledge, I believe you gentlemen were with us last month and had to sit in the waiting room, and we never got to you. So I do appreciate that. And thank you for your presentation today. Happy New Year. And Dave and Leanna, will get back to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jess. Okay.
Are we clear? Are they out of the room?
We're clear.
All right.
So,
Mr. Moran, your advice on this?
So here's the thing. I recommend investment with these guys. It's very unique. You don't find it everywhere. The access that they had. In fact, when I first talked to them, they were actually a little bit reluctant about using Zoom because of some of the stuff that they own. I said, you're kidding me, right? But they're right to the top of the intelligence community. And I think there's stuff in this investment that you probably aren't even allowed to be told. So it's very unique. I think that it's something we should do. I don't think it's something that we should do in a huge, huge way because we have a diverse private equity portfolio already. But with that said, my recommendation would be we're too big to be doing ones in $2 million investments. I would recommend probably a $5 million investment in this firm. And the fact that we've owned them already for a number of years, they've done a good job. I think they've earned the right to be to re-up with us.
Okay. Trustees, anyone?
Yeah. How long ago were they with us? Nate,
so I'm trying to do the math back in my head. So I believe it was 2013 is when they began with us. Because they still have a small, they still have about, I mean, I don't have it in front of me because it's on the screen. They still have about $900,000 in one company that they're looking to sell. So again, we gave them seven. We've gotten back 11, and we still got about another $1 million. So seven into 12, and that should be liquidated very shortly. So I would stay in that $5 to $7 million range would be the sweet spot as far as how much we should give them. You know, doing the quick math in my head, you know, five is about one and a half percent of the total portfolio, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it's our average. You know, most of our private equity positions are anywhere from 0.5% up to maybe close to 4% of the total portfolio because they're not liquid. And these are long-term investments.
Any other trustees with questions for Dave? Mr. McDermott?
There's no other, if there's no other questions, I make a motion to go with Mr. Moran's recommendation for a $5 million investment into this firm.
Motion has been made. Do I have a second? I believe Ebelisse is monitored. Motioned. Yes, you're on mute, Ebelisse.
Am I?
Oh, yeah, you are. We got you back now. Thank you.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, second.
It's seconded by Ebelisse Ribeiro. Take a vote now. Ebelisse Ribeiro?
Yes.
Mr. McDermott?
Yes.
I believe Stephen Cousins with us?
Yes.
Yes on that vote? And I am a yes also. I believe that is all the members that are here, trustees. The motion is passed. Thank you. I believe that's all the items today. If any trustees have anything else to speak of, other than that, I need a motion to adjourn.
Wait, excuse me, is Dave Moran presenting for Raymond James today?
Tonight, so it's been a long meeting. If you want to put the presentation up, I can do it in literally a minute and a half. If not, we could carry it forward to the next meeting.
Minute and a half, I'm tracking you.
I talk fast, so let's do it. Carolyn, I'll have contracts sent to you direct from Chart. We've done one in the past, so hopefully it's very similar. She's on mute. So let's go. If you can just enlarge that to 100% for everybody. And I'm going to be very quick. I have no market commentary. We'll talk about that next meeting because it'll be a good way to do the year end. So let's forward to the big number, which is a good one. Clock's ticking. My minute and a half.
Dave, I apologize. I didn't realize that you were still on the agenda.
Oh, no. You're good.
Take your time. If somebody has to cut out, I understand. But
we're going to do 10,000 feet down. The total portfolio of $360 million is a great number. It hasn't been that high in probably ever. I have to look back. But we've had a good run here. The one-year number up north of double digits in our year-to-date number, about 9%. To put that in perspective, the S&P's up a little under 15. So with our allocation right in line with that, our stock managers are doing their job. Sizert's right in line. Aristotle is right in line. Some of the highlights here, MidCap is finally coming back a little bit, the second portion of the report. And then to go down to the bottom, the small cap. Small cap's been was the worst performer for the first 3 or 4 months of the year, and now has come back to be the strongest performer. So if you look at those numbers, those bottom three managers, 32, 6, and 11 are just really strong. Those were all negative numbers going into the last 3 months. So we go forward to the next page, we'll talk about some of our international and fixed income investments. You can see our international, same story. I hate to repeat myself constantly, but WCM's still our strongest manager in that category, really double their index there. Second one's an indexed fund, and then you have Lazard doing the job also. Fixed income is that middle section, very muted. Most managers are in the very low single digits, and then some of them on the bottom, which are, again, a little more on the lesser quality investments, which has more risk but more return. You can see those one-year numbers are in the seven range, which is fantastic. We can get that from fixed income. Going forward, we're going to be a little bit challenged there. We'll talk about that at the next meeting. We've got our cash balances down there. Those change all the time. But we do have a decent amount of cash between our private investments and the cash on hand. So we could easily fund Chart and other things going forward. Go to the next page. And that's great. I mean, the only thing I want to mention there is Alkyon, which is our liquid hedge fund. It's a huge position, 6% of the portfolio. Look all the way over to the year-to-date number, 38% versus 6, 40% for the year. I think we all wish we had our own money in that. So they've been a real all-star for the fund. They're both in Lucifer and in Surf. The rest of it's all the private equity stuff. Charts on the next page, but we'll go through that in the next meeting or so. So January, we're not going to do a lot of presentations. We're going to get into the actual numbers for the year. We're going to talk a little bit more about private equity, all of our private investments, and do a year-end review as far as where we've come from and where we think we're going. The good news is that we still think that this market will continue to be a positive way to invest in equities, and we'll hedge ourselves against a tough fixed income market, continue to hopefully hire good managers. So with that said, and I think I might have gone to over a minute and a half, 2 minutes. Thank you very much for your business. Appreciate it. Sorry for the lengthy day today, but have a happy new year, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you, Dave. Same to you, and I apologize for the rush job. I didn't mean to rush you. I just didn't realize. That was 100%. Okay. Thank you again. Any questions for Dave from the trustees? I believe you're on mute.
I apologize. I had to take another call. What was the question?
No, Dave's just finished his presentation. Are there any questions for Dave?
We talked
to Evelise. 1 second. Okay. I believe there's no questions for Mr. Moran. Thank you, Mr. Moran. Appreciate everything you do for us.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Moran. You were a minute and 40 seconds.
All right. I owe you 10.
Thank you, everyone.
Just to go over this, I think everything, because I jumped into this late and I'm not sure. Did we check off every item? I believe so.
Yeah, I think we're good on everything else.
Great. So with that, just a motion to adjourn. I got a motion from Trustee Ribeiro. Second. Trustee McDermott, motion to adjourn. All in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you, everybody. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year, everyone. Yeah.